Okay, so we're going to begin the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Bet. Here the Gemara is going to discuss the line of the Mishnah by Ishet Imo, that a person inherits his mother. So I want to know, Minaha Nemide. Where do we know this from? Well, where do we know from two perspectives? How do we know that a son inherits the mother, period, I mean instead of a daughter inheriting the mother? And number two is, how do we know if they both do, or if the son and the daughter inherit the mother, that the son has precedence over the daughter, and that they're not, they don't have an equal standing when it comes to the mother? So now, the Tanur Rabbanan, b'chol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael. So any woman, this is in the parsha at the end of Parsha Maaseh, the other parsha b'not Tzofchad, when the b'nei Shevet complained about the fact that if b'not Tzofchad really do inherit their father, then the Shevet will lose out, and the nachala will be moved from mate le mate. So over there in the pasuk it says, v'chol bat yoreshet nachala mimatot b'nei Yisrael. Any bat who inherits, right, nachla mimatot, from matot being in plural, right, from two shvatim of Bnei Yisrael. So heach bat yoreshet shnei matot. How does a daughter inherit from two matot? Ella must be zu she'aviha mishevet echad v'ima mishevet echad. Must be that her father is from one shevet and her mother is from another shevet. Umeitu, and then they passed away, v'yashtan, and she inherits them. So now we know for sure, or this is the first step in the process, that a daughter would inherit both her father and her mother. For her father, we know already that if there are no sons, that the daughter has precedence and she inherits from the father. Over here, we're in addition to that, we're adding in the fact that the daughter inherits the mother. The problem is that the parsha there in Maaseh is also discussing the fact that you're not allowed to be lo tisov nachala mimateh lemateh. So how could the Gemara's suggestion be here that she's inheriting from multiple matot, that she's inheriting from her father and her mother, which is actually tisov nachala mimateh lemateh? Very good. So that's what the Rashbam says over here, that the pasuk is only makpid at the time of the marriage, that there shouldn't be hasavat nachala. Nachala can't move at the time of the marriage. How do you have a case where it won't move at the time of the marriage? Is that there were brothers. At the time of the marriage, there were brothers that were alive or extant. So in that case, when they got married, there was no problem. But then subsequent to the marriage, the brothers pass away, and therefore there's a bat left over inherit. So there, again, you can have a case in the parasha that original marriage was not premised on hasavat nachala, yet later on it became hasavat nachala, being the fact that the brothers passed away. And that's, so now the Gemara says, mainly ala bat. Okay, that works well, because now we know about a bat, ben minayin. I don't know that a son should also inherit from his mother. Kal v'chomer. It's a kal v'chomer. Uma bat shehora kocha b'nechzei av. When it came to inheriting the father, the son took precedence over the daughter. Then yafeh or yipa kocha b'nechzeiim. Here, by the nechzeiim, where she, right, as clear, she's the only one who's clearly indicated to inherit the mother, right? Ben shipa kocho b'nechzeiav inudin shipa kocho b'nechzeiim. So where the son who has, right, the precedence when it comes to the fathers, then certainly should have, right, it's the precedence here with the mother. So Gemara says, umimakom shabata. And again, from where we learned, malahalan ben kodem levat, just like over there, the ben comes before the daughter, afkan ben kodem levat. So over here, the son will come before the daughter. So the Gemara has two stages in this limud. The first stage is, how do we know that a son should inherit the mother? It says, that's obvious, because the son has more shaykhut, or has more precedence when it comes to the father, and over the daughter. So if the daughter has rights now by the mother, the son should have at least equal rights to his, right, sister. Then, on top of that, the Gemara says, well, not only does he have equal rights to his sister, he has more rights to his than his sister. He will take precedence. If there's a son and a daughter, the son will take precedence and inherit from the mother. So now, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi, Amru, Mishum Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav, Echad ben Vechad Abad Shavim Nechzeim. So Rabbi Zechariah ben Akatzav introduces the other possibility, which is that we never make the next step. We never make the step. We allow the son to inherit with the mother, but we don't necessarily give the son precedence over the daughter. So Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav believes that son and daughter are equal when it comes to Nechzeim. True, by the Nechzei Av, the son comes before the daughter. But when it comes to Nechzeim, when it comes to the mother's possessions, the son and daughter will be equal. My time. What's the reasoning of Rav Zechariah ben Akatzav? My time. Dayo levomen adin liot kin nidon. Right, that it's enough. It's enough of what you learn out from. Now this dayo is a little different than we're normally used to. We'll read the classic example of dayo and then explain how it applies here. V'tana kama lo darash dayo. Right, the Tana Kama doesn't believe in dayo levomen adin liot kin nidon. V'ha dayo doraisahi. That principle is a Torah principle. I mean, not only is Kal V'chomer a Torah principle, but Dayo Levom Min Adin Leot K'nidon is also a Torah principle. How do we know that? The Tanya of Abraisa, at the end, about the story at the end of Parshat Valotcha, Midin Kal V'chomer Ketzat, how do I know that you learn in Kal V'chomer? Because, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, this is a case where Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, and Hashem says to Moshe, if this altercation happened with her father, would she not be embarrassed, right, and stay out for at least 7 days? So now, the Kavachomer would dictate that if it was for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Arbasar, that it would be for 14 days. Because if that would be for a father, 7 days, then certainly for the Shekhinah, it's 14 days. Ella, Dayo, Lavo Min Adin, Liot Kenidon. That we can't learn out more than is. We only know as much as that is drawn from the Kal V'chomer, and no more. And therefore, 7 days would apply here as well. So that's why Miriam was only shut out for 7 days. Now the Tosus addresses a question, which is simply, how do you get to 14 days? I mean, first of all, even if you believe that the father is 7 days, all you know is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is more than that. So if it's more than that, why not make it 8 days? What all of a sudden did you get to 14 days? So the Rebbeinu Tam, suggests, listen, there are shlosha shutfim adam, the three partners in the creation of an individual. There's the father, mother, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But the chelik of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is equal to the father and the mother. I mean, he has two parts. The father, mother, and then a Kodesh Baruch Hu connected kulam, right? Connected both of them. So therefore, if you have a mother or a father 7 days, then a Kodesh Baruch Hu is 14 days, because he's double, right, what each of the other partners gives in. If the father were given seven, then Hashem would give. The underlying problem with that, and Tosfos points out, the underlying problem with that logic, which is so appealing, is then you don't need a Kal V'chomer. You don't need a Kal V'chomer that Hashem is 14 days. That would be the natural outcome. If one equals seven, then two equals 14. You don't need a Kal V'chomer. That is the natural, right, that would be the natural occurrence, meaning that if you had a mother and a father, then it's 14 days. You don't need a Kal V'chomer to teach you that. That's what would be min adin. So the Tosfos says it can't be. Rabbi Nachman of time, it doesn't feel it's right. So then again, he's left with the problem. Why not just say 8 days? Why do we get to 14 days? He's saying that some indicate, some say, and this is pointed out by the Tosefta. The Tosefta says, Kavachomer lemelech v'kohen. The Kavachomer is to a melech and a kohen, that certainly she have to go for 14 days. So some people say that that's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, who's a melech and a kohen. But those who reject that, and says, no, it's got to be talking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So what does he do in the end? He says, that a Rav Chaim HaKohen, Befarish, Kal V'chomer L'Shechina Yoter Ma'at. You're right. All that the Kal V'chomer teaches that it's a little more than seven. He came into Afikte Mizayin. As soon as he left seven, Dainu Hezger, Ukme Hashnei Hezgerot. 7 days is a unit. The unit of Hezger is called 7 days. We find that by Tzorat, right? We find that by Tuma'ah. That 7 days is a unit. So true, all we could learn from the Kal V'chomer is that it's more than 7 days. But more than 7 days, what's the next level of Hezger? It's another unit of 7 days. So that makes it 14 days. So that's it. Okay. Because we only have, right, that's
but
it.
We have units of one, though.
We do have units of one, but he suggests that Hezger, being shut out of the Machaneh, is in units of seven and not in units of one. We don't have a Yitziat Me'amachaneh for more than that. Maybe you have Shechlat Zera, which is a day, but it's really not. You're still part of, only have to leave the Machane Shekhinah. You don't have to leave the whole Machane. So the Machane Hezger is, right, something totally out. That's for 7 days. That's the suggestion. Now, what is the Dayo? Generally, when you talk about a Dayo, in this case, there's only one, it's easy to understand a Dayo here because there's only one moving variable. The only variable that changed was the person, right, who was offended or caused the offense. Meaning that if you have Miriam versus Moshe, or Miriam versus her father, and then you have Miriam versus the Shekhinah. So the only thing that changed was it was her father, and that's the Shekhinah. So we say, fine, if Miriam's, right, the proper conduct with regards to her father 7 days, then we know by the Shekhinah that it should be more than 7 days. But Dayola Vilmina didn't make her just like her father. Equal, no more than her father. You can't learn more than her father. If you can't learn more than her father, she'll be equal to her father. There's only one variable that moved. In our case, there are two variables that are moving. First of all, in the Kav HaChomer, number one is, right, we're talking about daughter and son. We're trying to learn that just like the daughter inherits, so too does the son inherit. But there's also a change in the other variable, which is that we're talking about a mother and a father. And that there's a mother who we know about inheritance and a father we know about inheritance. So since there's more than one variable, you have to be careful how you apply. Where's the dayo apply over here? So what you have to say, and this is the way you have to formulate it, I don't think it's easy. I think it's much more complex applying dayo over here. But the suggestion is that everything's learned from the mother. The mother is the source. Right? The mother is the source. Why is the mother the source? Because from the mother we know that the daughter inherits. So that's the source. Right now, when we're going to derive a law from somewhere else, where are we going to derive it from? We're going to go derive from the father how we should apply the law to the mother. So we go to the father and we say, okay, by the father, son and daughter inherit. So then we come along and we say, okay, so son and daughter should inherit by the mother. Son and daughter inherit by the mother, fine. But now we say dayo. If daughter is the original source by mother, and now you want to extend that and, you know, create something else, then it can be no better than the original daughter who inherited from the mother. The original daughter who inherited from the mother had all rights to her mother's inheritance. She didn't have to share it with anybody. I mean, that she wasn't nidche. She has a right there. So now when you add in the son, that same right should remain. You can't be pushed out her rights all of a sudden. That's what the dayo is over here. The dayo suggests that the limud from the mother has to remain, because it can't, you can't change, since that is the original limud, the equivalent of Miriam from her father, of being 7 days. So to hear the daughter by the mother, that's the original limud. That's where we're getting the, right, the source from. If that's the source, that can't be changed. That has to remain in place. That's what Dayo says. Dayo says that that stands no matter what. So if that stands no matter what, then when we add in the son, the daughter should still be standing. The daughter's still standing, that means daughter and son are equal. Again, it doesn't flow so easily. It's not the easiest understanding of Dayo Levomen Adin, but that's the way the Gemara is applying it over here. So now, if that's the case, what's the Tanakhama going to do? How could the Tanakhama suggest that the son should take precedence over the daughter? If you're learning the Kav HaChomer like he does, then it should be limit him to the fact that the son and the daughter both inherit equally by the mother, like Rabbi Elazar ben Katzav. Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. So Gemara says, no. The Alma Darayish Dayo. In general, the Tanakhama does use the principle of Dayo. The Shani Hoch, in our case, is different. The Kamar Kra Mimatot. By our pasuk, it says Mimatot, from multiple matot. From Itai, Savar Mevat Uvdak Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. Mitai decided that he wanted to, I mean, he was going to pass on Alocha, the case came before him, he was going to pass on Alocha, the Guzkari ben Akatzav, and keep a daughter and a son equal in the property of their mother. So, Amar Lei, Mishmuel Gaman, says, who are you holding like? Kizachariah? You want to hold like Zachariah ben Katzav? Office Zachariah. Wipe out, or Bimit Batel. Wipe out, zero, here, I mean, like, almost zero out, right? Rabbi Zachariah, I mean, that Alocha is not like him. You can't pass on like him. So Rabbi Tavla Abad Uvduk Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. Rabbi Tavla himself actually did pass an halacha like Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. Amalei Rav Nachman, hi. Nachman said, whoa, what's this? Now Rav Nachman, right, a Talmud of Shmuel, right, says to him, what are you doing? So Amalei, Dama Rav Chinina bar Shelmaya, Shalemya, I'm sorry, that Rav Chinina bar Shalemya, Yishmei the Rav. Now this is in the name of Rav, Halacha ke Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. So over here he's suggesting in the name of Rav that the Halacha is like Rabbi Zechariah ben Katzav. So Amar Lei, Zio Ahadar Becha. He says, reverse your position. Rav Nachman is suggesting to him, to Rav Tavai, reverse your position, Ve'ilo, if not, Mafikna Lecha. Right, I will put you into excommunication, and Rabbi Chinana Bar Shalemya Eit Me'onich. And I will, what I will do when I push you out, or I will put you in communication, I will put you out of reach for the strength of Rechina Bar Shelemya to help you. Onech, right, is that the strength? The strength of Rechina Bar Shelemya will not be there to help you out or take you out of that position. So now, basically what he was suggesting is that nobody's going to be able to help you now, and you better reverse your position, because you have the wrong halacha. Okay, so the next Gemara will maybe indicate such a thing. Here it's not clear why Rav Nachman is pressing them to reverse their position and said, okay, so they bazen like Rabbi, bazen like Shmuel, fine. Alright, but why would he have such a strong Lashon? Why would he take a strong position? Exactly. So now the Gemara is going to have another case, and that might indicate what he was feeling about the other case as well. I don't know. So Ravuna Barchia Savar, the Mevat Uvdak Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. Ravuna Barchia wanted to paskin again a look like Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. Amarlei Rav Nachman, my high. Again, Rav Nachman intercedes and says, what is this? You can't paskin the halacha this way. So Amarlei, Damar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. So in this case, it's not, right, this case it's someone else in the name of Rav. Here it's Rav Huna in the name of Rav. Halacha Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. Halacha is like Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. So Amarlei, Ashachlei. He says, I'll send for Rav Huna. Let's go find out from Huna what they really said this. Ichsif, he was embarrassed. Now the question here of why he's embarrassed about the fact that he quoted in the name of Rav Huna bar Rav, there's a number of possibilities. One possibility is Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom over here suggests, Daliova Amar Hachi. Rav Huna never said such a thing. He never said such a thing. And he was paskin in Lalacha, or trying to paskin in Lalacha in a certain manner, in order to bolster his position. He said over in name of an Adam Gagol. He said in the name of Rav Huna, even though Rav Huna never had said such a thing. And therefore, Rav Nachman caught him. He says, I'll go ask Rav Huna. And he was embarrassed because Rav Huna never had said such a thing. If he went and asked Rav Huna, he wouldn't agree, because he made it up. That's one possibility. That's the Rabbeinu Gershom. The Rashbam, on the other hand, gives two other possibilities, which aren't so extreme. And he says that one possibility is that Shemar Chazar bar Rav Huna. That maybe Rav Huna changed his mind. I mean, in Ochanami, he heard it from Rav Huna, but he wasn't sure if that Rav Huna had still held of that position. Maybe Rav Huna had changed his mind at this point, so that's why he was embarrassed. He was too embarrassed. The other possibility is that he was relying on what he had heard. He thought he heard from Rav Huna that this was the Lacha. And now when he raised the possibility that he'll check with Rav Huna, he started to doubt whether he really had heard it that way. Right. Confident in it, which is interesting, again, that psychologically it's interesting that when the person, if you go and say to them, we'll check, all of a sudden it brings doubt to what they would otherwise have had as a certainty, and we'll see that in a second. Why? So then, Rav Nachman gets angry at him. Why does he get angry at him? Because he says, Amalei, hashka ki nachnam shed Rav Huna, itrisat lekavli. He says, had Rav Huna passed away, you would have been defiant or steadfast in your objection to me. Well, what does that mean? That means that the only reason that over here, when they came to Paskin Halacha, and Rav Huna bar Chia was going to suggest a certain Halacha, the only reason he backed down is because Rav Nachman threatened him with checking with Rav Huna. That means that if Rav Huna was dead, and Rav Nachman couldn't check with Rav Huna, then he would have stuck with his position. So that means, depending on who you hold like here, if you hold like the Rabbeinu Gershom, that means that if he had made it up for Rav Huna and you couldn't check on it, he would have kept the position, even though it wasn't true. According to Rav Ashbam, it would have given him more confidence in his position, that he wouldn't have thought Rav Huna had changed his mind, or he wouldn't have thought that Rav Huna, or that he wasn't uncertain about what he had heard. I mean, again, this is an interesting psychological idea, which is that, had the person been dead, then you would have been certain about, he would have been steadfast in what he had heard. Right? Even though the same, nothing's changed that the person's alive or dead. But when you say, I'm going to check on you, then all of a sudden you start to question whether you really said it or not. Worried. Now that happens to apply. If you remember, we had this in Ksuvos, in other places, that the mere possibility that someone could check on you, meaning that if we know we can check on the individual who brings the item and says, but if I nechtam, if I nechtam, that gives them an additional tokef. Because the fact that they know that someone can look after them and go check on them, that makes them work harder to ensure what they're saying is true. That's the same idea with edut, when you're talking or giving over information about another party or about something that transpired, that we believe you when we know we can check on you. So when we can check on you, we know the person's going to make sure and ensure that it's true because he doesn't want to get caught saying the wrong thing. If we can never check on him, then there's less reason for him to be so careful because he never believes that he'll get caught in what he's saying, so he'll make less efforts to ensure that what he's saying is clear. The same concept here. So the Gemara says, V'ihu k'man Savra. Now, first of all we know is that Rav Nachman over here disagrees, And we know that Rav Nachman holds, could hold like Shmuel. But why is Rav Nachman so objecting to the fact that maybe Rav said something else? So where does Rav Nachman come off saying it's not Rav, it's not Shmuel? Everybody's wrong. That's because, Kihad Rav Shmuel. He holds like the one that Rav Shmuel, the Amrei Tarvayhu, that they both say, Ein Alacha Kabzchaya Ben HaKatzav. Alright, so that was the final or reason Rav Nachman was so sure of his position was that he had heard from Rav and Shmuel that the law was not like Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. So everybody who was quoting Rav, he objected to it and says, you're wrong. Rav never said such a thing. I have heard from Rav that the law is not like Rav Zechariah ben Katzav. So what you're quoting must be wrong. Or whatever you are introducing over here is not right. So.
Really good to deduce that from Shmuel's statement originally. And Shmuel said, a face. If Rav held like Zechariah, so Shmuel could be cholik on him, but would he have said, like zero, like
right.
No, it wasn't. Nobody looks like that.
It's a strong lashon. You're saying that strong lashon is indicative of the fact that no, there isn't an alternative opinion. Okay, that's a nice idea. And now, Mistamech Vazil Rabbi Yanai Akitfod Rabbi Simlai Shem'e. Rabbi Yanai, who was older and his vision had deteriorated. He was resting and going on the shoulders of his attendant or his, I wouldn't call him servant over here, but someone who is Mishamesh, him, that he was on his shoulders. He was carrying him on his shoulders and he's walking along. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda Nisi'ah is approaching them. So now Rabbi Samlai, the attendant, says, Bar'inish the Atala Kiblana, the individual who's coming is approaching us, right? He is, we can use the word ya'e, can either mean over here is nice or beautiful, whichever you want to pick over here, or someone's chashuv, of these possibilities. Vigulte, gulte means his cloak, is ya'e. It's also nice, pretty, or gorgeous, but also an implication that we know that he was wearing a talit shel tamid chachamim, the Rashbam calls it. And he was adorned, that he was dressed like that of a tamid chacham. When he reached him, it's almost like the story of Yitzchak, Gashisha, he felt him. I mean that Rabbi Yanai, who could not see, right, then his only way to determine who's in front of him is to actually touch them. So he touches the cloak of the individual who's approached him. Amalei, Dein Shiurei Kesak. The cloak that he's wearing is not a good quality. Right, it's the same material as a sack, the same material as a sack, which is a thicker, lower quality. And it's basically what he's suggesting is shiurei kasak, is that the shiur of sak in Hilchos Tumah is dalet al dalet versus a thinner, more expensive or a nicer beged would only be 3x3. So the fact that it's 4, he's suggesting it's 4x4 says this is low quality. Now, he doesn't say anything about the individual, all he's saying is about the clothing. But before, Rabbi Samlai had suggested an equivalence between the individual and the clothing. And then Rabbi Yonah just touches the clothing and sees that his judgment about the clothing is already wrong. We don't say anything about his judgment about the individual. But now the conversation, by Minai. So Rabbi Yehuda Nisi'ah asked Rabbi Yonai, Minai the bench, according to the Bab Nichseim. How do you know the son precedes the daughter when it comes to the Nichseim? Amalei, Dichtiv. Because it says, Matot. Mekish Mateim, the Mateav. Right? This is the same limud that the Tanakhama suggested above. We have Matot, and therefore there's a connection between Mateav and Mateim. Ma Mateav ben Koron Nabat, Ab Mateim ben Koron Nabat. So Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda Nisi'ah responded to Rabbi Yonah and said, Ima Mateav b'chor notel pishnaim. If you want to make it like the Mateav, then just like by the father, the b'chor, the firstborn, takes double portion. Ab Mateim b'chor notel pishnaim. So too over here. If you want to draw this equivalence that says anything that happens with the father happens with the mother, that just like the Bechor gets double portion by the father, the Bechor should get a double portion by the mother. So now you see what Rabbi Yanai thinks. So Rabbi Yanai says to Rabbi Samai, right, gold, let's cut this off. Right, time to cut. Lit Dain Tzavei L'Meilaf. This individual is not, it's either quick or, say, interested in the learning. I mean that he's just asking questions to cause, you know, to fight and to have an altercation. This Rabbi Yehuda Nisi'ah is not on the ball with these limudim here. So again, now you see what Rabbi Yanai was saying before. When he touched the beggar and saw the assessment of Rabbi Simlai is wrong, now he also says that the assessment of the individual is also incorrect. And the Gemara says, V'tam amai. Why is this? Why is this so true? Meaning, why was his question such a poor question? It's a pretty good question. Right? So what's wrong with it? Samar Abaye, Yamar Kra. That's what the pasuk says. B'chol asher yimatzei lo. So in Parshat Ki Tetzei, when it talks about Mishpat HaBechura, over there it says, B'chol asher yimatzei lo. Lo is, right, figured in the male form. Lo v'lo la. And that's it. When you find which is with him, yimatzei lo means that it only applies to male bequeathers. If there is such a word. Right? The males who are giving over inheritance, that's where the din of Bechor applies. It does not apply to females who are bequeathing, right, such an inheritance. So right now, Ve'ema, someone says, wait a minute, why do you have to say that? Ema'ani mile Bechor shenasa'o mana. That's true when you have a first-time father who's marrying a woman who's already had children. Right, so that's when the case is, when we say that line of b'chol asher yimatzei lo, because why does it apply to lo? Because the mother is not relevant in this case. The mother already had children, so therefore she's only a b'chor. He's only a b'chor to the father, and not a b'chor to the mother, and that's why the case is like this. Aval, had the case been b'chor shenasa lebetula, had it been the case where it was a first time child for both parents, hachanami. And then he would have said, "Ein ochanami the shakil," that he does take a first, a double portion, both with the father and the mother. I mean, that if you're going to say there's a chiddush in the pasuk to say that it only applies to male bequeathers, again, I don't know if the word applies, but male. So maybe this case, when you want to have a chiddush that says that only a male bequeather will have the din of bechor and not a female bequeather, then we're going to say or suggest, right, that it's limited to the least chidush. What would be the least chidush? That to say, it only applies. That applies to a case where the father is—it's the firstborn child for the father, but not the firstborn child for the mother. That's what the pasuk was speaking about. But in a case where both, it's the firstborn for them, then in ochanami, that whether it's a male or female bequeather over there, the bechor will take pishnayim. So Amar Rabbi Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Kra. No, the pasuk says reshik ono. It says the first of his strength. Ono v'lo ona. I mean that the din of bechor only applies to someone, oh no, the male strength, meaning the firstborn of the male, and not the firstborn of the female. So that's how we learn it. So Mar says, "How mi ba'ilei leba achar nefelim?" Wait a minute, that you can't use as the limud, because we need that limud of oh no to teach you about a bechor that is born after there were a number of miscarriages. If there are miscarriages, why Lavi Bechor le Nachala? Because he's still classified as a Bechor when it comes to Nachala. Now, in terms of Peter Rechem, he may not be qualified as a Bechor. Peter Rechem means that you're the first one to be born, whether it's a live birth or whether it's a miscarriage. The first one to be Poter the Rechem, to move through the Rechem, is classified as the Bechor. So there, in the case where there are multiple births beforehand, even though they're miscarriages, this Bechor is not a Bechor le Kohen, meaning that he's not a Peter Rechem. But nevertheless, he is a Bechor le Nachala. Why? Because the Limud. That one of the qualifications of Ono is that he, right, is drawn towards him, meaning that someone that the father has some sort of connection to. The father does not have a connection to a miscarriage. Right? There's nothing there to connect with. It's only a live birth, and we say by a Bijon, 30 days, that has to be someone, a live birth that's going to survive, and now it survives for 30 days, and then the father draws a connection with him. So one of the qualifications to be Bechor the Nachala is someone that the father draws that connection with. That's not true of Nefelim, but we learn that out from Ono. It says it has to be Reshit Ono. Ono, the term is used in a number of different ways. The word on, which is actually what the Ramban is actually toying with in the past week's parsha, which is Ben Oni. Right? How is Binyamin Ben Oni? What's the term on mean? So on can mean strength, which is one possibility. And on can also mean, right, avelut, which also can mean some sort of mourning over here. So in this case, it might be a mixture of both, which is that Reshit Ono means the first of his strength, but Ono means also one that he would be mitabel on, someone that he would cause him to have a velus for, which would be only someone that his heart is drawn after, that he would have some sort of on. So the possibility over here would be, again, similar to why Binyamin was named Ben Oni, according to Ramban, which is strength and a velus. together. So that's the possibility of explaining what does it mean, Mishal Libo Doveh Alav. Someone that he is drawn after, that he would be Mitabel Alav. That's from the word own meaning both of Elut and strength. Right? And there are other possibilities of what the word own is connected to Aven, but that's not what the Gemara is using it over here. So Imkain, the Vaz Gemara says, Lay Makra, Kihi Roshut Own. My Ono. Right? Then it just said, Kihi Roshut Own. My Ono. From then you can learn two things out. You can learn, number one, own, meaning that something that he's doveh alav. And number two, ono means his strength, meaning only applying to the male and not to the female. Vakate. This is an interesting possibility in the Gemara. Vakate. So now you want to narrow the chiddush down. Amon shenasa bitula. That's only true of an almon, someone, a man who had given birth before, or has a bechor, that has then married a bitula, that marries a woman who this is the first child for. Aval bechor shenasa bitula, it's the firstborn both for the father and the mother, hachanami deshokil, then he may take it. Why? So let's say, the Gemara now moves. The Rashbam actually claims that there are two steps here. I assume what bothers the Rashbam is that the same thing that bothered me at the time, which is that, how could you have, the Gemara is now trying to play both sides of the coin. The Gemara said before, the Pasuk is talking about a case where it is a Bachur Shina Masa Almana. Right, that's going to be the explanation of the Pasuk. Now all of a sudden the Gemara says, oh, no. The Pasuk is talking about a case where it's an Almon that married a Ptuba. So how could you have it both ways? How could you play the pasuk in both ways? So Rashbam actually claims that there are two strengths here. First of all, let's say that this is a bachur de masa almana. All right, it's a bachur that marries an almana. Then reshidonot betel b'shnayim b'choloshim atzilo abaloona. So in that case, it should be excluded. But it's not. Sheim amon shnasa b'tula de'ika ona lachud enerotel b'pishnayim. Says, well, in the case of bachur shnasa almana, then there's no need to say lo velola, because the law won't apply at all. A bachur who marries an almana, it's not her firstborn. So then there's nothing to talk about in terms of lo velola. The exclusion is not meaningful in that case. So that's the first case. Okay, but so then if we have such a limud, and we have an explanation of the pasuk being that it's a bachur who's marrying an almana, then that limud has no relevance. All right, so now you want to make it relevant. So when will the case be that it's relevant? It's a case where the almon marries a bitula, where it's the firstborn for the woman, but not the firstborn for the father. So in that case, we'll say that it applies to lo and not to la. But now what does the Gemara say? Okay. But that's only because she's alone. She's the only one who is bequeathing inheritance over here. So in that case, we'll say the smallest chiddush to say where the woman does not bequeath inheritance to a bechor is when it's only her and not him. But then there'll be a case, and that's what the Gemara suggests over here, where they both are bequeathing, both the father and the mother. And we'll say almost a migo. Migo that the father gives over to the bechor, so too the mother will also give over to the bechor. And we will suggest that the enochanami, that a bechor can take pishnaim in the mother as long as the father is also granting pishnaim in that case. So that can't be the solution. Now, Amar Rava. Rava comes up with the puts the nail in the coffin, puts in the final sentence. Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Lo mishpat ha-bechora. That he has the mishpat ha-bechora. Mishpat ha-bechora le-ish, v'lo mishpat ha-bechora le-isha. There's a mishpat ha-bechora to the ish for a male, and not for the woman. But here, even though lo in this case really refers to the bechor, yeah, the recipient, nevertheless, the Gemara over here is darshaning, or Rav is darshaning that lo is darish, is the god of the av. It's talking about the father. I'm not sure exactly what the makeup of this drasha is, but he's clearly suggesting, Rav, that lo, which is not the pashupshan, this lo is referring to the recipient. But here he's saying, no, it has to do with the bequeather. And he says that when it says, well, it's the male form. So the bequeather only is a male. That mishpat ha-bechora, the din ha-bechora, only applies by males. Now, if you say that, then it doesn't matter what form it takes. It doesn't matter if it's bechor la-amana, or if it's, amon with a betula. None of those will matter because that's mishpat ha-bechora. Mishpat ha-bechora is the all-encompassing mishpat. So the mishpat, that mishpat only applies by males, so male bequeather. Right. Now, ve'isha tishto. Right, a husband inherits his wife. Minahani mile. How do you know that a husband inherits his wife? Tatan Rabbanan, Shero, Zuishto. Because in the Pasuk of Nachla it says, right, and it seems to make sense here, it says, Unin Tatem and Nachotol the Shero Akrovilab Mishpachto, Beyarash Ota. Right? So he'll get it from the Shero that is close to him. By Yerash Ota, he'll inherit her. Who's the her here? If you say Shero refers to the wife, then inheriting her is his wife. So that's the explanation of Sheiro. You would think that the opposite be true, that the wife will also inherit the husband. It says that he will inherit her. Who yoresh ota? Then he yoresh oto. The pasuk limits the direction of the inheritance from simply yoresh ota, that it will only move from the wife, the female, to the male, but not from the male to the female form. So, cry, lav hachitive. What do you mean? The pasuk doesn't sound like that at all. Pasuk says, unetatem en achlatot b'sheiro, right? It'll give it over to the sheiro. Hakarov elav mi mishpachto. Right? That's one statement. And then, v'yarash ota. There's, the problem is that the words, karov elav and mishpachto, divide between sheiro and yarash ota. It almost makes it sound like there are two different statements in the pasuk. There is sheiro, and then there is v'yarash ota. So how come you are connecting between Sheiro and Yerash Ota? Says the Pesukim don't read like what you're suggesting over here. So I'm Rabbi Taritzachi. How does he deal with the fact that it sounds like there are actually two people in the Pesuk? One, but Yerash Ota, that he inherits her, and the other one before that, which is Sheiro, is Akarov Elav Mi Mishpachto. That's someone from his family. Right? He moves the Pesuk. He moves the Sheiro after, right, the Karov Elav. If you do that, then the Sheiro is juxtaposed by Yerash Ota. And Akarov Elav means, okay, he says, you'll give it to the nachla, right, to the one, right, that is close to him, Jairo, and his wife, Vereshotan, he'll inherit her. After Abai does that, Rav asks, Amarava, Sakina Harifa, Mifsaka cry. Says, how'd you get such a sharp knife to cut up the psukim like that? How can you change the wording of the psukim? Ella, so listen to Rav's suggestion. Ella, Amarava, Achikamar, Unitatem en nachlat, Jairo lo. He says, oh, you should read the pasuk as Netatem et nachalat sheiro. What's really written in the pasuk is nachalato. So he's taking the vav off nachalato. Sheiro. The pasuk is lisheiro. So he eliminates the vav and the lamed from one, the vav from nachalato and the lamed from sheiro, and he makes them into a word lo afterwards. So he says, Netatem et nachalato sheiro lo. Right, he will give him the nachalat of his sheir, of his close one, meaning his wife, lo to him. So Kasaber Gorim Musivim Dorshim. So it sounds like the Rava believes that you can cut off letters over here and move them over to the other place. So now, right, cut and paste. So I would say, and it bothered me right away, which the Rashbam asks, is Rava has an even sharper knife. He's cutting off letters. He's not even cutting whole words. He's cutting off letters. He's taking a little, should be sharper knife. He's got to get out a couple letters and move them over. How can Rava accuse Abai of having a sharp knife and cutting out and moving things around when Rava does the exact same thing? There's offered two possibilities. One possibility is that a sharp knife only applies when you move an entire word, not when you move letters. That the problem that Rava has is that he's actually shifting words. Shifting words is too significant in terms of moving around the psukim. Moving letters, that's a small movement. That's not such a big deal. But moving words is too big a deal. Or the other possibility is that lav dafka, he's migra of a mosif. The other possibility is that it's not that he's actually doing that, but he believes that that's the pashup shot in the pasuk. Right? The pashup shot in the pasuk is the way that he reads it once he moves the letters over. He's moving the letters to show you how you should read the pasuk. But then that's what he really does. He believes that's pasuk pshat in the pasuk. The pasuk pshat is that natatem et nachlato klomar tindnu leze ha'ish shahayitiyye nachlato. So it says unetatem, right, when you say you should give it to him et nachlato, that it should become his nachala. Not unetatem et nachlato, to give over his nachala. When you suggest the pasuk pshat in the pasuk is nachlato, means his nachala should be given over lekarov mishpachto, that the person who passed away, the husband's nachla should be given over to his karov mishpacha. That's nachlato, belongs to him. So now, what the way he's rereading it is to say, no, natatem et nachlato. You should give him the nachla that he deserves. He should get his nachla. What's his nachla? Right, give him his nachla. What's his nachla? Is the sheiro akarov elav, his wife's possessions, v'yarash ota, and he will inherit her. So the Rishbam suggested that he's trying to read the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk that way, and the Gorin Mosifim is only to indicate what the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk is, but not that literally he does it. He can read the Pasuk without the Gorin and Mosifim and get to that conclusion. The original statement of Ha, Cry, Love, Ochitivi means Vinatam and Nachalato. It sounds like give over his property, right? When you give over his property, the Sheiro, to his wife. It sounds like you're giving his property to wife, Akrovi Love Mishpato, Vayarash Ota. And then it says he'll inherit her. So then, what is it? Is he giving his property to her, or is she giving his property to him? So that's what, there's a steer in the pasuk. So what the Shaul is pointing out is that that stira, the stira in the pasuk of both which way the Marusha is going, forces you to have to reinterpret the pasuk, and therefore say the pasuk pshat in the pasuk is that it's all moving in one direction. How do you do that? You say that you give over the nachla so that it becomes his nachla, right? From the sheiro for his wife. And now, if Tanya might tell the, we have another Tano who learns it from somewhere else. The Tanya, that's Rabbi Akiva's position, and Rabbi Akiva is learning the word she'iro, meaning that his wife. They're just giving the end of the limud, but the same limud that we've used until then. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, you don't have to do this. Rabbi Omer, the pasuk at the end of Masay that says a bat is your reshet nachla mimatot bnei Israel bechad mimishpachat aviv tziyah liisha. She has to be married to one of the her father's family. But sevet abal katum medaber. What's the problem that's being worried about by benot slavchad? Benot slavchad, the shevet comes and says, wait a minute, how can they go ahead and go marry someone from another shevet? They're going to move the nachala from this shevet to another shevet. What are they worried about? They're worried about the possibility that the wife will pass away, that one of the benot slavchad will pass away, and then her husband will inherit her. If her husband inherits her, that's how you move nachala from one shevet to another shevet. So that's the problem. If you see that's what they're worried about in the pasuk, it's obvious that that's what's going to happen. If a wife passes away, her husband inherits her. You could ask, and the answer, the Gemara has to deal with this, I mean, it's not, I'm just pointing it out to you, is that it could be talking about the son. They could be worried about the child, not the husband inheriting the mother, but rather if they have a joint child, the child will inherit and belong to the father's, right, mateh. And that could be the problem over here. So this is not conclusive, but the suggestion at this point is that the Asevet Abal, that's what they were worried about. Ve'omer, now there's another proof. V'lo tisov nachalav nisrael mimateh al mateh. Nachla should not move from one mateh to another. Ve'omer also says, V'lo tisov nachala mimateh al mateh acher. The nachla should not move from one mateh to another. Ve'omer, and it also says, another proof, Elazar ben Aaron mate, v'ikabruoto begivat pinchas beno. When Elazar Kohen at the end of Yeshua passes away, it's the last couple of sukkim in Yeshua, says Elazar Kohen passes away, and they buried him in Givat Pinchas, in the land of Pinchas, the area of Pinchas, his son. How does Pinchas have Givat Pinchas if he got all the property that he gets is from his father passed away? It should be Givat Elazar. It's Givat Elazar. They just passed to his son Pinchas. Why is it called Givat Pinchas? Pinchas isha umeita. Pinchas married a woman, she passed away, and he inherited her. So when he inherited her, that's how he got the property. So that's why it was Givat Pinchas and not Givat Elazar. It didn't come through his father. The inheritance came through his wife. Vomer, it also says, Uskruv olid et Yair, vahi lo esrim u'shalosh erim ba'eretz ha-gilad. So Uskruv gave birth to this Yair, and Yair owns these 23 cities in Eretz ha-gilad. And again, the same question, v'chi minayin li-Yair, shalai yal Uskruv. How does Yair have property that his father Uskruv did not have? V'meish, nasha Yair isha, must be that Yair married a woman, umeita, and she passed away, v'yasha, and he inherited it. So he inherited the woman, and it shows that the husband inherits the woman. So now you have five different proofs that are brought down here in the Brisa, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that prove that a wife bequeaths all of her possessions to her husband when they don't have children, that the husband is the inheritor of the wife. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, is my Vomer? Why do you need 5, 6? Why does the Brisa keep saying Vomer, Vomer, Vomer? What is it that's bothering about them at each proof that needs the successive proofs? That's what the Gemara will deal with tomorrow, is why is there a multiplicity of proofs in this case?